Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, November 7th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, CalFresh recipients to receive full benefits for November, Humboldt Soups hold off on no camping law, and Ray Hamill with the sports report. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkyon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
As of yesterday, some CalFresh recipients began receiving November benefits after delays due to the now 37-day-long government shutdown. Earlier in the day, a federal judge, U.S. District Judge John J. McConnell Jr., ordered the Trump administration to make a payment to fully fund the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, for November by today, Friday. Prior to this move, the Trump administration committed to partially funding SNAP during the shutdown, stating that they were $4 billion short of the $8 billion it would cost to fund SNAP for the month of November. Last month, on October 28th, California Governor Gavin Newsom sued the Trump administration over the withholding of SNAP benefit payments.
Cruelty is the policy. That's what this is about. It's intentional cruelty, intentionally creating anxiety for millions and millions of people, 5.5 million here in our home state. So again, our state of mind is pretty clear. We're going to win this lawsuit.
According to a news release issued from Newsom last night, quote, following two lawsuits filed by California and other states and a coalition of others, California families are beginning to see their full SNAP benefits restored on their EBT cards. Earlier today, a court ordered the Trump administration to immediately issue 100% of funding for 5.5 million California SNAP recipients. Following the regular process for providing CalFresh benefits, benefits are now beginning to be available on recipients' cards so that families can again access the food they need. End quote. According to a release from the Humboldt County Department of Health and Human Services, households that would normally receive their full benefits between November 1st and the 5th are on track to have all benefits available by today. Newly eligible households for November are also on track to receive full benefits. Households that get benefits through the Women, Infants, and Children WIC program can also expect to continue receiving them throughout the month. For more information about CalFresh benefits, the website is benefitscal.com or the number is 1-877-410-8805. Humboldt County supervisors are struggling with what to do about homelessness and have opted to pursue what's described as compassionate assistance instead of a no camping law. Daniel Mintz reports.
Torn between wanting to help homeless people and addressing the problems they cause when they camp on county properties, the Humboldt County Board of Supervisors has given direction to staff on compassionate assistance. The seemingly intractable issues surrounding homelessness were discussed at length at the November 4th supervisors meeting. Up for consideration were the proposal to draft an ordinance banning overnight camping on county properties. The discussion was sponsored by Southern Humboldt Supervisor Michelle Bushnell, who said the idea, quote, is not about removing houseless folks. It's about what can be accomplished if there was an ordinance that says we could work with them. Sheriff Billy Hansel also talked about helping people, saying, quote, we lead with compassion when dealing with illegal encampments. But he also said the camping is widespread and creates public health issues.
When we look at public land right now, the areas that we're concerned with, McKay Track has had issues with people that are camping off Palmer Boulevard, as well as off Lucas Street. Those are three areas that come to mind. I know there's many more throughout the county, but our deputies have responded constantly to try and to warn people, to provide opportunities for people to move on. And so we have to provide no trespassing ordinance, you know, orders and those kind of things from based on the county that they are trespassing, they are polluting the environment by, you know, urinating, defecating, disposing of, you know, of garbage, you know, throughout those camps. And so we are enforcing those laws in order to help people get to an area where they can become housed. But an ordinance would help in those circumstances.
Public Works Director Tom Matson said the county spends up to $150,000 a year on waste disposal related to illegal camping. He said laws like no parking ordinances help, but, quote, an overall public ordinance would probably be very helpful in shortening the timeline when these issues come up. The discussion touched on the multiple locations where illegal camping is common and the pollution and waste issues being dealt with. But Supervisor Natalie Arroyo said a similar public area no camping law was enacted when she was on the Eureka City Council, and it wasn't effective.
It proved, in my opinion, to not be very utilized or helpful, but it did create a lot of strife. And I have, frankly, very little appetite to kind of go down that road again, because almost always there was another law or rule in place already on the books that could be utilized, like no overnight parking, you know, civil or criminal violations, environmental health issues that could be used as a tool. I realize there are times when that's not the case, and I think if we are going to go down this path, I would want to try to be targeted to perhaps county parks or the community forests where there are specifically a lot of issues, or places that have a lot of environmental sensitive habitat, something like that.
The nexus between law enforcement and social work was discussed at length. Hansel had said homeless people are living under what he called deplorable conditions, and, quote, for the person that is stuck in these conditions, I want to see better for them. Bushnell said the enforcement angle could act as a lever for accepting help in some cases. She related her personal experience with a close family member, her mother.
My mom, I had places for her many times. She refused to go because she didn't have to leave. She could have came and stayed with me. She didn't want to. She chose under the bridge, and nobody told her she had to leave there. If she had been told even one time that she had to leave, then maybe she would have taken another option that was handed to her or given to her, but she didn't. And I don't want ever to do heavy-handedness, but it is a tool. And if there are places, because number one is where do they go? We don't want to move them. But if there are options, then it is our responsibility as well to help them get those options that are going to make their living conditions better.
The idea of a new law was discouraged during a public comment period, with one speaker saying, quote, criminalizing homelessness does not work every single time. And another saying, quote, if you want people to throw stuff away, then you should provide places for them to do that. And she added, the same applies to bathroom facilities. With the discussion dead-ending, Supervisor Steve Madrone made a motion to form a committee composed of staff and two supervisors to look into making a compassionate assistance ordinance. There wasn't much direction beyond that, but the motion was approved in a 4-1 vote. Arroyo voted against it, as she has doubts whether it will be a good use of staff time. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
College of the Redwoods turns around their season. Here's Ray Hamill with the sports report.
It took over 400 minutes, but a team finally scored on the high-flying Ferndale Wildcats football team last weekend, but it was still a very impressive day for the Cats. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the Wildcats in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including all the latest high school football news from around the North Coast, how the College of the Redwoods football team has turned around its season, some NCS soccer and volleyball news, why it was a good start to the basketball season for one local team, and why this will be a big weekend in local youth football. But first up, the Ferndale Wildcats were finally scored on in their ninth game of the season last week when McKinleyville quarterback Ruger Baxter connected on a pair of touchdown passes to receiver Trevor Marsh. But it certainly wasn't all bad news for the Wildcats, who won the game 82-12, scoring more points in a single game than any other HDNL 11 player program has has in at least 22 years since Max Preps began keeping records. The victory also clinched at least a share of this year's Little Four Championship, as the Cats improved to 9-0 overall and 5-0 in conference with one game remaining. They can claim the title outright with a win at Arcata on Friday night. The Tigers kept their championship hopes alive with a 34-7 win at Hoopa and can share the title with Ferndale for a second straight year if they win on Friday. Also last weekend, the Fortuna Huskies kept their Big Four championship hopes alive with a 26-18 win over St. Bernard's. The Huskies have now won three straight and five of their last six games to go to 4-1 in the Big Four and 5-4 overall, while the loss was the first of the year for the Crusaders, who dropped to 4-1 and 8-1. The two schools will share the conference championship if they both win or both lose their final conference games this weekend. The Huskies will host Eureka on Friday night, while St. Bernard's will host Del Norte on Saturday afternoon. Del Norte is 2-3 in the Big Four and 5-4 overall after a 7-0 win last week over Eureka, which lost an 8 straight game and dropped to 0-5 and 1-8. The South Fork Cubs were also in action last weekend and won for the fifth time in 6 weeks, winning on the road at California School for the Deaf 71-46. The Cubs, who are 3-1 in the NCL3 and 6-2 overall, will host LC Allen on Saturday afternoon at 1 p.m. South Fork can claim a share of the league title with a win and a Tamales loss at Potter Valley. The Mendocino County teams were also in action last weekend. The Willits Wolverines saw their chances of a league title end with a 28-20 loss at St. Helena, as they dropped to 5-2 in the NCL1 and 7-2 overall. The Wolverines will try to get back to winning ways when they host Fort Bragg on Friday night. The Timberwolves beat Cloverdale 37-18 last week and improved to 4-3 and 4-5. The Ukiah Wildcats' hopes of a conference championship took a hit when they lost 50-43 at Maria Carrillo and dropped to 3-1 in the Redwood Empire Bay Conference and 5-4 overall. Ukiah can still clinch a share of the conference title with a win at Annalee on Friday night and a Maria Carrillo loss against St. Vincent de Paul on Saturday. In local college football, meanwhile, it has been a tale of two seasons for College of the Redwoods. The Corsairs traveled to Butte last weekend and posted their first win over the Roadrunners since 1990, winning 22-21. For the second time in 3 weeks, CR scored the winning touchdown in the final minute. It was also the third straight win for the team after an 0-6 start, and Redwoods can clinch the National NorCal Conference Championship and a playoff berth with a win at home against American River on Saturday afternoon, coupled with a Butte victory at Sierra. Saturday's game will take place at the Redwood Bowl, with kickoff set for 2 p.m. Switching gears, the North Coast Section soccer playoffs kicked off this week, and it was a good opening day for the HDNL girls teams in particular. In Division 1 girls action, four league teams advanced to this weekend's semifinals, guaranteeing the HDNL a section title. The only question now is which of the four remaining teams will win out. Despite being the smallest school in the bracket, the Ferndale girls received the top seed and opened with a 10-0 win over Technology. The St. Bernard's girls also won their opener, beating Fortuna 2-0 in a game that was called early after a fight broke out between the two teams with just 2 minutes remaining. The ugly scene took from what was a good afternoon for the league's teams. The Crusaders and Wildcats will face each other in Saturday's semi-final at Ferndale High School. The Del Norte and Eureka girls also won their playoff openers. Del Norte beat Arcata 1-0 and Eureka won 3-2 at Kelseyville, and they will play their semi-final in Crescent City on Saturday afternoon. In Division 2 girls action, Willits and Fort Bragg remain on course for a possible championship showdown next week after both schools won their playoff openers on Wednesday. Fort Bragg defeated Calistoga 1-0 and will play Credo in Saturday's semi-final, while Willits beat Tamales 2-0 and will play Middletown on Saturday. In NCS boys action this week, there were several one-score games involving local teams. In Division 1, Fortuna had an opening round bye. Arcata beat Cristo Rey de La Salle 2-1 and Del Norte fell 2-1 at International. In Division 2, McKinleyville lost 5-4 at Credo, and in Division 3, South Fork won 4-3 at Contra Costa Christian. In NCS volleyball, meanwhile, the last three remaining HDNL teams all lost their quarterfinals on Saturday night. Eureka lost at Kelseyville, St. Bernard Bayards fell at St. Vincent de Paul and Ferndale lost at Laytonville. In local college basketball, it was a good start to the new season for College of the Redwoods. The CR men traveled to Napa for the Live Like Geno tip-off tournament and won both of their games, defeating Las Medanas 106-102 in overtime and Mendocino 78-66. And rounding out a busy weekend in local sports, on Sunday, the Six Rivers Conference season will conclude with three championship games. All three games will take place at Ferndale High School, with the action getting underway at 9 a.m. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
In national news, extension of ACA tax credits is at center of federal government shutdown stalemate, KPFA's Lauren Schmidt reports.
Open enrollment for healthcare plans is now underway. And Protect Our Care California says Republicans in Congress are nearing what they call a point of no return in their efforts to end Affordable Care Act subsidies, an issue at the center of the current government shutdown. For more, we spoke with the organization's California director, Matt Herdman.
Hi, I'm Matt Herdman. I work with Protect Our Care California as the state director. We're an organization that's fighting for better quality, more affordable healthcare. So right now that looks like the fight over the ACA tax credits, where every single Democrat in Congress believes that we should extend the tax credits so that health insurance premiums don't spike up.
Can you quantify the increase?
Yeah, so premiums are increasing by around 10%, but without the subsidies, a lot of families are going to see increases as high as 97%, folks who don't or who lose those tax credits. And so we want to make sure that the ACA tax credits get extended.
Do you believe that Republicans are the main obstacle to progress on healthcare at this point?
Some Republicans, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, are actually on board with that, which is kind of surprising. But the California Republicans, folks like David Valadao, Young Kim, Daryl Issa, Ken Calvert, have been really staunchly opposed to extending them. And that's kind of the fight that's going on right now. And the reason we think it's so important is because health insurance is one of the most expensive line items on everyone's budget, right? And increasing by 97%, that's doubling the price year over year. That's just unaffordable for most families. Imagine paying $1,000 a month, and then suddenly it's $2,000 a month starting in January. I don't know many families that can just budget in an extra $1,000 every single month, month after month, $12,000 a year, just because Republicans in Congress refuse to extend the ACA tax credits. That's just unaffordable for most California families.
We have heard Speaker Mike Johnson say they'll have the healthcare subsidies discussion once the government reopens. If that's the case, do you still support Democrats holding firm through the shutdown? Or do you trust Republicans will actually come to the table afterward?
Yeah, we're really happy to see Democrats holding the line strong in defense of the ACA tax credits. I think now is the time to fight for them. Open enrollment just started, 3 days ago. So there are people who are already buying plans right now, which means that, this isn't a fight that you can kick the can down the road, handle in 2 or 3 months. Open enrollment ends at the end of the year in California this year. People are already buying this. There is an urgency to it. And sort of the Republican plan of we'll deal with this later is not a serious plan, right? They've been saying that for ages. Donald Trump famously said, I've got a plan to replace the ACA. It's going to be great. And I'll just tell you what it is in a couple weeks. And then he did that again and again and again. And the only plans they ever came up with were ones that would have kicked 20 million people off of their health insurance, which was obviously unpopular. When they say, don't worry, we'll deal with it later, historically, that has never gone well for folks. So I'm glad that every Democrat is fighting to extend the ACA tax credits right now, because there is an urgency. People are already buying insurance for next year.
Protect Our Care is saying that our country is reaching a, quote, point of no return when it relates to affordable health care. Can you elaborate on what that means?
On some level, the increase in health care costs comes a little bit from the uncertainty, right? Health insurance companies have to set their premium prices. And part of the increase that we saw is because they knew these subsidies were likely going away because Republicans didn't plan to extend them. So they know that some people are going to choose to go without insurance. And that means that you have people who are generally healthy leaving the risk pool. which is sort of a technical way to think about it. But when you have healthy folks who aren't getting insurance anymore, the average cost to provide insurance goes up. And so what that means is that they have to budget for likely higher expenses, so they end up increasing costs. So part of this, you know, Republicans saying that they weren't going to extend the ACA tax credits has already sort of irreparably increased health insurance premiums. And the extending the subsidies, though, is the best way to make sure that the worst of the increases don't happen.
For people signing up during open enrollment right now, what happens if someone buys a plan before any changes are made to the Affordable Care Act? And is there a gray area for consumers? And if so, what does the future look like?
So there is a little bit of uncertainty over if the tax credits are brought back, what form it would look like. We're in an unusual situation where open enrollment is happening now without the tax credits, but we're trying to fight to bring them back. So it depends what legislation is passed out of Congress, what that would look like for consumers. So it's a little bit tough to answer that. But one thing that folks can do is you can go to Covered California, which is the website where folks can purchase their insurance on the open market if you don't get insurance through your work. And there you can see what plans exist and what they cost. And you can also look back and see what a similar plan would cost last year to see whether or not you're going to be affected by those large premium spikes that Republicans have caused.
Any final thoughts for our listeners, especially those unsure what this all means for their healthcare coverage?
Folks should reach out to their members of Congress, especially Republicans like Ken Calvert, David Valadao, Daryl Issa, Young Kim. These folks represent districts that are uniquely affected by some of the healthcare cuts that Republicans have passed. Right? David Valadao and Ken Calvert, their districts have some of the highest uses of Medicaid, but they still pass drastic Medicaid cuts. Young Kim's district has a large number of folks that receive ACA tax credits, and she's not extending them. So reach out to your member of Congress and tell them how important it is for them to fight for more affordable health care for California.
California Director of Protect Our Care, Matt Herdman, thank you for speaking with us.
Yeah, thank you, Lauren.
Senate committee debates Affordable Care Act health coverage as millions face massive price hikes, KPFA's Max Pringle reports.
It didn't take long before simmering Washington partisan tensions bubbled to the surface as Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Chairman Ron Johnson of Wisconsin took Ranking Member Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut to task over the length of his opening statement.
He probably had three or four more pages of his opening statement. He was going to filibuster for about 30 minutes. So that's what's happening here.
I wish I had a half an hour more, but there's no way that I.
Again, you are just being rude.
After the dust settled, Committee Chair Ron Johnson said the ACA, or Obamacare, as it's more commonly known, is overpriced and inefficient. He used his own state as an example.
In Wisconsin, Obamacare exchange plans have increased 3.3 times the rate of inflation since 2013, whereas employer-sponsored insurance has risen at 1.6 times the rate.
A record 24 million Americans signed up for ACA coverage at the beginning of the year. That's double the number of people who signed up during the pandemic. Democrats have held firm on extending the coverage past its year-end deadline. Ranking Member Richard Blumenthal.
We are seeking to extend the health care tax credits past the end of the year. They make health care insurance affordable for millions of Americans who are right now going to the exchanges and trying to determine whether they can afford insurance.
Committee Republicans invited three witnesses to testify to what they said were the fiscal issues with Obamacare that need fixing. Joel White is with the Council for Affordable Health Coverage. It's a Washington-based advocacy group for market-based reforms to health care.
Obamacare isn't working for working Americans. It fails the affordability test, and it needs major surgery from Congress to get back on the right path. The law was passed in 2010 with exchange plans available in 2014. As a result of the ACA, there's far less competition and choice, and that is hurting consumers.
ACA enrollee Shanna Vestagen also testified. She and her husband are fitness trainers at a small Wisconsin gym.
We purchased health coverage for our family through the ACA marketplace for many years. We currently are paying $460 each month for our family of four. Without the enhanced premium tax credits, our premiums are projected to increase to an unaffordable $700 a month in 2026.
Democratic Congresswoman Maggie Hassan from New Hampshire said families across the country are facing similar difficult decisions at the end of the year.
Millions of people are facing huge increases in their health insurance bill that is going to further undermine an already fragmented and difficult to navigate and expensive healthcare system and just drive prices up.
Meanwhile, Politico is reporting that two Senate Democrats and two House Republicans are planning to huddle Friday over a possible bipartisan plan to extend soon to expire Obamacare subsidies. That's according to four people with direct knowledge of the matter. Centrist Senate Democrats are reportedly working feverishly to hammer out an ACA framework in more detail to give Democrats an off-ramp to vote to reopen the government. For KPFA News, I'm Max Pringle.
And in National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The mother of an Apache 16-year-old who's been missing since last month says her child's remains were discovered by tribal and federal police earlier this week. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, it comes after the state recently named a new alert system in honor of another Apache teen, Emily Pike.
Chalestia Coloway, who went by Tia, disappeared in mid-October. No turquoise alert had been issued. But on Monday, authorities found human remains in Navajo County near the Knott's Landing community in White River on the Fort Apache Reservation. Authorities asked for help in trying to identify the body by releasing physical and clothing descriptions. Soon after, Tia's biological mother confirmed on social media that her daughter was found. The investigation is being handled by the White Mountain Apache Police Department and BIA Fort Apache Agency. The Bureau of Indian Affairs Missing and Murdered Unit is also involved. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
It's not easy for a school to take in 70 students at once, but a school in Anchorage has done just that. It's opened its Yupik Language Immersion Program to children whose families were forced to move to the city after hurricane-force winds and floods devastated coastal villages in western Alaska last month. As KMBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, the school feels warm and welcome to the students.
Morning.
Hello.
The day at College Gate starts just as it did back home, with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready? Recited in the Yupik language, or Yuktun. When College Gate began its Yupik immersion program 8 years ago, it had just one kindergarten class and added a new grade every year. Now, it's a tight-knit family that just got bigger. The new students play hard at recess. The school's daily routine seems to help them feel more grounded, something that's hard to do when you've lost everything.
It just felt like my house moved to the ocean.
Eileen Aliagorea says she feels safer since she moved to Anchorage. She and her family were inside their home when the flood carried it off.
The house spinned really fast, and we were like going down to the river, and then we stopped. We hit something really hard 2 times, and my living room window broke.
It's a nightmare that Aline says her new friends at the school are helping her to forget. Friends like Lily Lowen.
After something so big happening, they're still so, like, cheerful, and they're so friendly, and they were just so fun to be around, and I'm really glad they are here.
Lily says this experience has been an opportunity to learn about something larger than yourself.
It makes me feel like I could be doing more to help, even though I'm a kid.
But simply being a kid may be a bigger help than Lily realizes, to share jokes and play games like Boop.
No, she got you that time.
In Boop, you tag people on the nose, and then they're it. Add some pig snorts, and you get a real giggle fest going. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Dennis Marr, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Ray Hamill, Lauren Schmidt, Max Pringle, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMA News is online, and you can find us on KMA.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605. Or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.